Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas. Today, I am joined by DeAndrea Baker, who is one of the first people I met when I moved to LaGrange, Texas. We are going to talk about the hardest parts of marriage and walking into a church for the first time as an adult. Let's dive in. Welcome to this episode of Wits End. Today we have my good friend, DeAndrea Baker.
Hello.
Friend, so good to have this conversation with you because as I look at you right now, it's funny because I know I've kind of peer pressured you into doing this, haven't I?
Just a little, just a little.
Yeah. Just a little.
It's okay.
So, you know, I have to say that you're partly to blame because DeAndrea and another friend actually got me this microphone for my birthday.
We did.
Little did you know that it was going to come back to haunt you.
Yes.
Right?
I would have not expected that.
I was going to.
Definitely didn't think about that.
So DeAndrea and I have bonded over a common love of chicken salad. And truly, I think that our lunches and just enjoying food together, our mutual love of toasted croissants and really good chicken salad has been like what's made us really bond.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
It's still like a go-to on a regular basis. So DeAndrea, would you just tell us a little bit about your background and your life?
Yes. First, thanks so much. Thanks for encouraging me and all the things. But I was born and raised here in LaGrange. I have lived here all my life. My mom and dad, my mom was 16 when she had me and my dad was 18. That started off just really unstable home. I don't ever remember as growing up as a child, I don't ever remember God being talked about. Faith was not part of our daily lives at all. And my parents went on at 16, they got a divorce when I was 16. And I met my husband at 17 years old. And so I was a senior in high school and met him working at a job I had after school. And yeah, so just kind of started off really unstable, really shaky, and kind of continued through the early adult years for sure. Yeah.
Wow. So I think about myself as a teenager.
Yes.
And think about what I would have been like. I would have been an absolute train wreck. So tell us about it, to get married as a 17-year-old. So talk about your marriage in the beginning. What was that like?
Well, I was just adding to what you just said. I have a daughter who is about to be 18 next month. And so for the last probably year and a half, I have thought back to what my life was like when I was 17 and a senior in high school and where she's at exactly right now. And it's just
that's crazy,
mind boggling to think about that. But I was 17 whenever I met him and then actually 19 when we got married. I just think I was searching for like security and stability and he was a little bit older. And so he kind of had a plan for his life and I was flailing around not knowing what I was doing. So just kind of, we brought those two worlds together and it was rocky.
Yeah. So not like happily ever after. Oh, this is just like smooth sailing.
No. In the beginning, I feel like our marriage was incredibly hard. We had no foundation. I don't even know that I knew what a healthy marriage looked like. I knew like I wanted that and I would have said that to anyone, like, can't wait to get married and just start my own family. And, I had no picture of what that even meant, or what it took to have that. Like that was kind of just not even something that was thought about. 2 years after we were married, we had Kendall, our daughter, and,
so this point, you're like 19, right?
I was 19 when we got married. I was 21 when I had her. Yeah. But I think in my mind, I was, having a baby always makes everything better. And so in my mind, I was like, okay, we're going to be parents. Yeah. This is going to be great.
And happy family. Yeah.
Yeah. 6 months later, we were separated and living in separate homes because it made it so much harder. And we didn't know how to even function being a couple, much less being a couple and parents. So, we separated and I moved out, and Kendall and I moved out and got an apartment. And it was just like one thing to another and really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're 21, mm-hmm. you have a newborn, you're in an apartment, you're separated, mm-hmm. and already have lived a lot of life, but you're still really young. So mm-hmm. when and how did things shift?
Honestly, Kitty and I talk about this all the time. Probably every few days we'll talk about marriage and life and try to pinpoint like when things actually began to change. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess it goes back to that time of us being separated and living apart. And in my heart, knowing that that wasn't, you know, I was following in the footsteps of my parents. It was the very thing that I always swore, like, I was not going to go down that path, but we were. And I guess during that time, Kenny's mom was she was an avid prayer warrior, and she constantly was telling us, you know, I'm praying for y'all, just don't give up, I'm praying for y'all. And that was such a foreign concept that I was like, okay, you know, thanks.
Right. Did that really mean anything to you at that time?
Nothing at all. No. I mean, this sounds terrible, but I found it kind of comical. Like, okay, you know,
makes you feel better.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, very much so. But I remember her begging. I mean, she would, you know, just don't give up. You've got to keep working at it. You've got to keep trying. You know, marriage is not easy. And we ended up going to counseling, which wasn't necessarily very successful for us. And I think because both of us were so selfish, like we wanted what we wanted yeah. and weren't willing mm-hmm. to compromise or come together. So
was it almost like you wanted counseling to fix the other person?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Which I think a lot of us maybe do when we go into counseling. Yes. It's like, tell my spouse what's wrong with them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I definitely wasn't at a place to look within myself at all at that point. So although Kenny was, I mean, he was raised in a Christian home, obviously I'm talking about my mother-in-law being, you know, incredibly right. prayerful. He was raised in that type of home and had that upbringing, but he had very much strayed from his walk with the Lord. I mean, he'd kind of put all of that on the back burner. And even as I was thinking about this podcast and as I was thinking about just our journey, I feel like, you know, maybe that partially that was me. I, mm-hmm. because of where I was, I had kind of pulled him away from what he knew. Mm-hmm. And so he had gotten so far from even seeking the Lord's guidance in his life as well. But during that time and during all of that process, we kind of got to this place where we were like, okay, we're going to do this last ditch effort and try church. And his parents had suggested it numerous times. But it just, again, wasn't something that was a part of who I was or what I was familiar or comfortable with. Very foreign. But we did. And so we just shows like living in the same town my entire life. We went to, Cross Point Community, which at the time was Second Baptist. And, we began going every Sunday. At that point, I think we were still living separately, but had agreed to do this together. And so, each Sunday we would leave and I would say to him, like, I don't know what it is about that place, mm-hmm. but I really feel something I don't know, Kenny, I feel like they're talking to me. I feel like even though I don't even understand what's going on. And so every Sunday we would go back and I really believe that through that whole process, like God just got a hold of my heart in a really, really big way. And it turned my whole life upside down. I mean, right side up, I guess, because it wasn't. But I through that, I feel like he was able to reveal so much about who I was and who Kenny was and just bring Kenny. Like, obviously, Kenny, you know, knew a lot of scripture and knew a lot of mm-hmm. things about the Bible and about God, but he had just gotten away from it. And so it just kind of like renewed that fire in him. And
it's amazing.
It's really cool.
Yeah. How long was that process?
again, thinking about all this, I thought, like, it sounds like it just happened right away.
Right, you know? Exactly. Like overnight.
I went to church a couple days later. I'm good.
Yeah.
No. It was actually like 6 years. Like when I was thinking of from the moment we started going to church till I was 23 when I accepted the Lord. And I mean, I'll never forget that day, obviously. And not even really knowing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember the specific words I said that day, and it was like, now looking back, I think like, I have no clue.
Yeah.
But I was 23 when I accepted Christ, and yeah, it was probably a good 5 years after that, that I even, can say that like in our marriage, we were at a place where we both kind of felt more on the same track. It was kind of like ups and downs during that 6 year, overall 6 year process, but like of just not even, I mean, not even feeling like we were, you know, on the same path. But yeah, so it was definitely a process, and it's still, a process. Like,
yeah,
in no way have we like arrived, but I at least feel like now we are united and in going in the same direction.
Wow. That is so encouraging, because when you say 6 years, I think about what 6 years looks like in a day in, day out basis. That means there's lots of hard months, weeks, and days in there where it doesn't feel very hopeful.
Yeah,
right. And that there isn't much maybe light at the end of the tunnel, or even like fruit or progress.
Yes.
So what would be some encouragement that you would give to a young husband or wife who's listening to this, or somebody who's ready to throw in the towel?
Most importantly, I think just inviting God into your marriage. I feel like that was something that was kind of unheard of for me in the beginning, but upon realizing like my need for Jesus, and then realizing the importance of having, if your marriage, if it wasn't founded on that, like if the foundation wasn't there, inviting God to be a part of that. And then I also always think, Kenny and I did like some brief counseling, I guess, upon me really becoming a Christian and a believer in Jesus. Like, we ended up meeting with the pastor and the pastor at the time, and doing like some counseling. And one of the things that he said that literally has stuck with me to this day was like the reference of like the triangle, and where, you know, you're each at the corner of the triangle and God's at the top. Mm-hmm. And so as you're moving up the triangle together, you're obviously growing closer to God.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know at the time that I realized the significance of that, but I feel like that image has stayed in my mind from back then till now, even. Yeah. And at times, one of you may be moving, at a faster pace, or you may be trying to pull the other along with you, or whatever that means, you know, whatever that looks like. But keeping God as the center, obviously, is like the number one thing that I would. And then also praying daily to see your spouse through Jesus's eyes. And that's a daily choice, because I feel like sometimes, you know, the world would tell you give up, or the world would tell you you shouldn't be treated that way, or all these different things that. Right.
And you're not talking about like in an abusive situation. You're talking like,
absolutely not.
Like,
yes.
Oh, you deserve, you know, you deserve everything.
Yes.
So if your husband isn't, you know, being nice today, or isn't, you know, he's not in a good mood, then,
right.
You deserve what makes you feel good, kind of a thing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. In no way do I mean, you know, if you're
right.
Yeah. All those, but I do feel like, you know, I mean, you're just, the world kind of tells you like, you got to take care of yourself. Like, you do what makes you happy. Look out for you. Yes. And I don't necessarily always think that is what Jesus is asking us to do, especially in marriage.
I mean, I know for myself, I think that if, and I think my husband would say the same thing, I think that if Tim and I had taken the world's advice of, mm-hmm. do what makes you happy, we would be divorced like many times over, you know, because I think there have been seasons and weeks and years of this just isn't easy, and this doesn't feel good. And so,
yes,
I think it's just so encouraging to hear you say that.
One thing that we do, we do talk about a lot is the blessings that we both feel we have, like, that we've been given in our marriage, now that we're able to see that, like, and identify those things. Many of those blessings would not be had we given up through those incredibly hard times. I feel like a lot of where we are today is because of those trials that we went through that were incredibly, hard things. But we, it, like, I don't know, through the perseverance or whatever, it's just felt like an incredible blessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many years have you guys been married now?
We're coming up on our 20-year anniversary.
That's a big deal.
It's a huge
deal. That's a really big deal.
Yes.
That's awesome. So talk a little bit about, for you, coming to church as an adult. You're a young mom. You're in your 20s. Yeah. What was that like? What held you back? What do you think was intimidating?
Yeah, that was really hard. Coming, like, even agreeing to go to church was really hard. I didn't feel like I fit. I was the opposite of what I would have considered a churchgoer. It just wasn't. And I had friends. I mean, I remember, you know, growing up, like, there were friends whose parents faithfully took them to church or Sunday school or whatever, but that wasn't me. It wasn't my family. And I just, obviously, being the rebellious teenager that I was, I didn't feel like I belonged in a church. And I didn't feel like I was good enough. Like, even once I started going and I wanted to continue going, I still always felt this shameful, yucky feeling of, ew, I really don't belong here. Mm. Which I know couldn't be farther from the truth, but it was absolutely how I felt.
How long do you think that lasted for, that feeling?
Gosh, I don't remember. I mean, probably a while.
Yeah.
I definitely think that was something that I struggled with for a long time. And I think that's part of my passion now for wanting people to feel like no matter where they are, like, there's a place for them, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I feel like I say yeah a lot.
You're making me cry.
No, don't cry.
I am. So what made you want to come back despite that feeling of I'm not good enough, the shame that you felt, the inadequacy?
I think I may have referenced this earlier, but the feeling in my heart, like, I knew I had an incredible need for, obviously now I can say, like, I knew it was a need for Jesus. Back then I just knew I needed something.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know
what it was,
but what we were doing was not working. And who I was, who I had allowed myself to become wasn't working. And I knew it was going to take something bigger than, I mean, we had tried everything else.
Yeah.
And so it was, again, I mean, I think it was that, like, okay, you know, I'm giving it up here. Like, if this is real. And I even remember saying that to Kenny on one of the Sundays after we had left, like, all right, if this is legit, like, literally this was our conversation in the car. If this is legit, then next Sunday, if I still feel like this, I'll, like, walk down the aisle, because back then we had, like, the time of invitation, you know, showing my age, but, like, every Sunday faithfully the time of invitation where you could walk down, you know, and talk to the pastor. And I was like, if I still feel like this next Sunday, I'll know it's real. And I literally, like, I didn't, again, prayer wasn't a part of my life, but I was like, God, if you're real and you hear me and this is legit, then you'll, you know, I'll feel like this next week. And I did.
So what? Yeah, that's what happened.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Yes. I could go on a whole nother story about that, but yes, I did, very much so. I walked that aisle and it was a powerful moment.
Yeah.
But so I think it was that, though, just the feeling, like, in my heart, I couldn't deny it. And it was enough to make me continue wanting to, you know, come back and figure out what this was about. Also, seeing something different in people. And I again, I don't know that I was close enough with anyone who was truly following Jesus, but I knew that something looked different about some of the people that I had even just begun to meet and get to know. And I wanted to know what that was about.
What do you feel like you could even see then? Like what was the difference?
Joy. Kind, like just genuine kindness.
Mm.
And yeah, like yeah. They cared.
Yeah.
You know, like really cared about us, and they didn't even know us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was different.
Yeah. When you look back on yourself then, when you first started a relationship with God, how do you think that you've grown, or what are the ways that you almost look back on yourself then and see how you've changed since then?
I feel like that is hard because I do feel like it is a continuous process. But I think more than anything, realizing that my life has purpose, and it's not about me. Like it really, no matter what's going on or any of the things, like it's not about me. And so, I feel like I've just become a little bit, you know, more selfless and a desire to put others before myself. Yeah.
So I want to ask you this question because we've talked about this in our friendship, about how I have been raised in the church,
mm-hmm.
and you're someone who first came into the church as an adult. And so our perspectives often are so different. And I love that in our friendship as we've grown over the last couple of years, because it's this whole different insight that I might share something with you or even run something by you of how I might say something. And you'll be like, well, I would think about, you know, the woman in the room who doesn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I remember one of the first times we talked about church and you said that you had been at some, you know, church gathering and people had said something like, well, you know, Psalm 23, like, you know, like, yeah, I don't even need to mention it because everyone has it memorized, you know, and you're kind of going like, oh, I don't belong here. I don't know what that means. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yes.
But that was really huge for me. And it has been huge for me mm-hmm. in a role of bringing women into this ministry in our town. So talk a little bit about how we can do unintentional damage in the church.
I definitely think that's something I think about quite often because of what I had said earlier about coming in, you know, and not knowing anything, not even owning a Bible. And so I feel like, what you said, I mean, just saying things, assuming that you've grown up knowing them or you've heard them a million times, or even things, you know, about God. I remember in the beginning always thinking like, okay, wait, they're talking about God, but they're also talking about Jesus. Like who, and then you got the Holy Spirit. So like who is this? Like, I don't even understand.
Right.
So many things, I mean, Whitney, I'm putting myself out here right now, but like even I was serving on staff in the church for probably a year, maybe two. and I remember being a disciple, like how do we disciple people? You know, what does it look like to be a disciple? It was talked about all the time. And I was on staff and I was like, I don't really know first, like I need to Google what disciple is, because that wasn't something, it was like,
right.
Just not something that like anyone had ever really laid out there, you know?
And that's not a word that we use in outside of the church, really, for the most part.
Yes. And so I feel like there's a lot of that, a lot of, you know, a lot of terminology that we use without realizing like, okay, are we really explaining this well? Do people understand, you know, that not everyone, I mean, even the song Zacchaeus or, you know, simple things that like,
that maybe you learn maybe if you're in Sunday school or something like that.
Yes, or you, attend church on a regular basis or participate in those things. But if not, and I feel like a lot of people do come in as adults, especially now, I think you see it a lot, and they come in thinking like, please don't ask me a question, or just definitely trying not to put people on the spot or like in an uncomfortable position or assuming that they have the Bible or, you know,
just that they even have a Bible or
even know why they're there.
So it's really good. So I'm sure there were people in that journey, especially over, you know, you've been now, it's been over 15 years now that you've, you know, you would say you've been walking with God, but I'm sure that even when you think about that, there's people that, that come to mind. And, you know, I know that most people who are listening won't necessarily know those people, but so instead of talking about the names, I'd love just to hear, what are some of the things that, that people did, that stood out to you, or what are again, encouragements that you could give to people, of the way that you were really ministered to and loved, that would encourage someone else?
I think one of the most impactful things for me as maybe, I mean, not even a believer, like before I even would say that I was following Jesus, was there were specific people who absolutely loved me, encouraged me, and met me exactly where I was in the junk, like very much in the junk. And rather than judging me or, you know, even distancing themselves from me, because the truth is, like, there were probably times where, you know, they wanted to, or even, I mean, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but they were willing to just walk right alongside me and help me and have hard conversations. Like, it wasn't that they just pretended that, you know, I was on the right path, but they were willing to, like, sit down with me and cry with me and help me to see that, you know, God's ways didn't necessarily look like what I had been told my whole life.
So when you say hard conversations, you don't just mean like being willing to empathize with your hard situation. Maybe were there people that also were even helping challenge you of, hey, maybe you're not living in a way that's going to bring about, you know, the fruit that you want in your marriage?
I think before that happened, they were intentional in building a really strong relationship and showing me that they were there, like they were for me. It wasn't, you know, so like there was a trust built there that I had grown to like realize, hey, they deeply care about me. And so, yes, those hard conversations absolutely happened. And I remember them like it was yesterday. And there were even times where I remember getting my feelings hurt and being like, you know, wow, like that was hard.
Yeah.
But being brought back to the fact that they were only trying to help me. Mm-hmm. And in the long run, like I'm incredibly thankful, eternally thankful. Like it's, it was huge for me. But, so I think that's just really important to like think about and, like how we can be that to others. Mm-hmm. And then also being intentional in surrounding and building that community for ourselves of people that are going to always point us back to the truth, because sometimes it is easy to just, you know, have those people who are going to be like, you go for it, girl, do you.
Right.
But is that really what we need and what God is, you know, wanting us to do?
Yeah. So when you were talking, I was thinking about a proverb that says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. And I've always loved that, but it's also very uncomfortable because when you really think about that, it means that there are times when the words that the people that love you most are going to say to you actually are going to pierce your heart. They're not going to be easy, comfortable. They're not going to feel good. But that the people who love you the most truly are going to be those ones that are going to say some things that might wound you, but are actually going to heal you in a spiritual sense and point you in the right direction. So hearing you talk about that is just really, it's so interesting, but it seems like that your heart was also in the right place and you were ready to hear those things.
Yes.
So maybe those people too on the other side, that they had to really sense like, is this, you know, is this the right timing to say some of these things to her. And obviously you were in that hungry place of wanting to learn and grow, and you wanted your life to look different. And so you were willing to do whatever it took to head in a different direction.
For sure.
Thank you, friend, so much for being here today. I know that I peer pressured you.
You can buy me some chicken salad later.
I will buy you chicken salad, okay? I will treat you next week, okay? Yes. But really, thanks for being here, for being willing to share. And I hope those of you listening that this was an encouraging conversation for you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Whitney. I appreciate you having me. Yeah.
Today's episode was made possible by Carrie Gakey at Southern District Properties Group, brokered by Compass. Carrie is a native Texan and 15-year Brenham resident. She has over two decades of real estate experience. Carrie has had a particularly significant impact in my family's life when she led us through the home buying process for the first time in 2017. Carrie serves all of South Central Texas within the Texas Triangle. Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Wits End.
Yeah, are you ready?
I don't know. I'm nervous. Just for the record, I have no idea what he's about to ask me. Literally no idea.
Okay, so I had the idea that you have these interviews that you're doing, and you're asking people questions that they don't always know in advance what
usually
they're
going to
be asked.
We talk about it.
Yeah, but
they're prepared.
They don't know specifics.
Sometimes.
Okay, so I think it's only fair that we give you some questions.
You're putting me in the hot seat.
Yeah, so we're gonna start doing these outros every time.
Is that a real word?
It is now.
Outro.
Yeah. At the end of each episode, I'm going to ask you...
Wait, what is an outro? There's retro, and there's an intro.
Yeah, so intro goes into the episode, outro goes out of the episode.
So retro, what does retro do? It looks...
That does not apply to podcasting. Okay. So, yeah, they'll be different every week.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll be jovial. Sometimes they'll be more thought invoking.
Provoking, I think.
Provoking. Invoking or provoking. Sometimes they'll be both.
Sometimes they'll be grammatically incorrect.
That's right.
Using the wrong vocabulary.
Okay, so are you ready for your first try of this?
Yes. I feel like I'm on the hot seat and I'm nervous.
That's kind of the point.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, this is what it feels like to be at the principal's office.
That's right. So, what is something you've been reading, watching, or listening to that has been life-giving to you lately?
I have been reading a novel called All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Dare, or Doerr. I don't know how you say his last name. Really good story. I hadn't had the time to read many novels lately, and we went on a road trip, and a friend gave me that one. And so on our family road trip, I got to start reading that one. And... the thing about that book is it's a historical fiction book set in World War II. And what I love about it is that it's giving two different perspectives, really on opposite sides. So there's a character who's a blind girl who is growing up with a French father and is dealing with all the fallout of the Nazi occupation in France. And then you have a young man who is joining the Nazi army and growing up into that and that that mindset and that thinking and that brainwashing. And
So it's really powerful to be reading the story from different sides and to be seeing different perspectives. And so that's, I think it's been life-giving just in the sense of just having that story to look forward to and kind of get into. And sometimes I only read for, you know, books that I need to read or that are more informational or spiritual in nature, but faith-based, but then I forget to read some good novels. So that one's been a really good one that I've enjoyed.
Are you done with it?
No, I still, it's 500 pages and I'm a slow reader and I don't feel like I have enough time to read. So I still have, I'm in the last 100 pages. So hopefully in the next couple of days I will finish it. I think that these characters' lives are about to cross. They've never met each other, but well, actually they just kind of interacted with each other the first time, but I think that's going to be really, really interesting. So it's made me want to start a book club or something like that, just because I believe that all truth is God's truth. And so you can be reading a secular book and sometimes you come across some really powerful things that maybe the writer isn't even coming from a faith perspective, but they hit on something that resonates with you because it's a truth that God actually originated and created in the beginning. So it's interesting. Yeah, it's been good, I think, just to read a novel that's just a book for pleasure and then remember how good stories are and the power of stories and yeah, so I've enjoyed that.
Okay, so this next question is a little bit different. How would you go about selling hot chocolate in Central Texas in the middle of summer? I need details, timeline.
I'm not the entrepreneur. You are.
I need what you're...
So I would ask you to come market it
for me. Nope. You don't have any resources available. You have to come up with a sales plan and a sales pitch for selling hot chocolate in the middle of Texas in the summertime.
Well, here's the ironic thing is that everywhere that people have air conditioning, it becomes actually so frigid that you have to wear a sweatshirt inside in July because you're so cold. And so to be honest, a lot of times I go in places, but I've prepared by bringing a parka because I know that I'm going to be shivering the entire time I'm in the building. So it could be something that is a... how will you market it? Come get some hot cocoa.
I'm sold already.
Come get some hot cocoa when our air conditioning is freezing you out. That's so we don't call it hot horrible. Cocoa. Well, so here's the thing. I have a legit idea now. You start drink. Here's the thing. Who actually drinks a full mug of hot cocoa? No one ever. It's like way too rich and you feel sick afterwards. So
depends on how good of a salesperson you are.
You start the hot cocoa in the AC building where it's set at like 64 degrees and you're shivering in your sweatshirt. So you start drinking it there. And then as it cools, what you then do with it is you get out your popsicle set that came with the hot cocoa and you pour it in to the popsicle set and you then freeze that. And then when your kids are hot and sweaty and you've been outside and you need a cool snack, it's like you become suddenly like the ice cream truck.
Okay, so you're proposing a dual climate hot chocolate / chocolate freeze pops.
Yeah, it's like you get the whole kit. So it's like, I don't know what you're really good at coming up with the clever, catchy names, you know? So I would definitely have to get your help on that. But it would be like, you know, hot cocoa for the air conditioning, like we said.
Nope, we're going to have to workshop that for sure. It's not going to fly. I'm 100% positive that domain name is already taken.
And then you get with your set for only $19.99, you get your ice pop set. And that's where you basically turn your hot cocoa into ice pops. Frozen cocoa pops. So do you like my idea?
Seems like a lot of work, I'll be honest. And I'm not one that gets cold inside in the summer, especially in our house, because I feel like I'm hot everywhere I go in the summertime in Texas. But I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Would you eat my frozen cocoa pop?
Maybe.
Even if I don't drink half of it and there was some backwash in it?
I don't think that frozen hot chocolate would taste very good.
And wouldn't it just be like a fudgesicle?
No, because it has fudge in it.
Well, that's probably not true.
It would be like a watered down hot chocolate with backwash in it.
You basically gave me an impossible task, and I came up with something pretty clever, and you're totally making fun of it.
I'm not making fun of it. I just don't know that I'd be your first client.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll work on that.
All right. That's all for this segment. I feel like we should come up with a name for this segment.
Okay.
We'll do that next time.
Okay.
That's it for now.
That's it.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.